was probably at $15 an hour. And how long that stuff takes. Really?
We'll call the meeting to order. First order of business is roll call. JD Elquist is here, Chris Granville is here, Jonah Jensen, Daniel Rocky are excused, Lisa Schlosser is here, James Steele is here, and Jeff Williams is excused. Item two, missed you guys again. Ross Buffington and Marshall McClintock, our ex officios from Wedge Neighborhood and North Slope. Be more important.
We'll start.
Item 2B, approval of minutes. We have two sets of minutes in our packets, one from September and one from January. If we can does anybody have any comments or corrections on either of those sets of minutes? Motion for approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Seconded.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded by Mr. Steele and Mr. Granville. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Administrative reviews. Does anybody have any comments on those? Those on 1210 North 5th, 710 South J, and 1202 North 7th will be approved then. Special tax evaluation, 3A, 720 North K Street. Mr. McDonough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is one, I'm going to read a couple things just into the record, but first I'd just like to say that customarily we have done these after October 1st and they come in on the assessors, from the assessors, because that's the filing date for each calendar year to get the property into special tax status for the following year. So the commission could wait till after October to process this, but there's no real reason to. Once it goes forward from this commission and it's approved, the commission will then, the paperwork will then go to the county assessor and they'll process it and it'll go into the 2015 pool. And so it's staff's feeling that since we aren't experiencing a large volume of these right now because of the economy, partly that we should just process these as they come in. There's no reason not to. And so this is special tax valuation. I'm just going to explain the program quickly for the record. WAC 25420 enables local governments to adopt local legislation to provide special tax valuation of historic properties that have been rehabilitated. With regard to the application review process, state law authorizes local historic review boards, you guys, to determine, one, whether the property is included within a class of historic property determined to be eligible for special valuation by the local legislative authority under an ordinance or administrative rule. And this, in Tacoma, this means properties that are defined as city landmarks, which includes contributing properties within local historic districts and individual landmarks. Secondly, whether the property has been rehabilitated at a cost equal to or exceeding 25% of the assessed improvement value at the beginning of the project within a 24-month period prior to the date of application. And three, whether the property has not been altered in any way which adversely affects those elements which qualify it as historically significant. If the local review board finds that the property satisfies all three of the above requirements, then it shall, on behalf of the local jurisdiction, City of Tacoma, enter into an agreement with the owner which at a minimum includes the provisions set forth in WAC 25420120, which includes provisions for the long-term maintenance of the property, provisions for going back to the Landmarks Commission should there be changes made to the property, and the fact that the property will be at least once a year visible to the public. When it's this house on the street, of course it is. Upon execution of this agreement between the owner and the local review board, the local review board shall approve the application. So, per Tacoma Municipal Code, Chapter 1.42, the Tacoma Landmarks Commission is the local body that approves applications for special tax valuation. So, this is Agenda Item 3A, 720 North K Street, which is in the North Slope Historic District. This is a contributing property within the North Slope. The costs claimed were $61,348.08. The assessed improvement value prior to the rehabilitation was $182,400, which is a 34% of the $61,000 is 34% of that value. The work occurred January 2012 to May 2012, or 5 months, and the work was interior. Staff reviewed the expense sheet and recommended approval of the application and the amount submitted. And if approved, this SDV will be in effect from 2015 to 2025. And I don't believe the owner is able to be here tonight, so.
Comments? Discussion?
I can try to answer any questions.
Do you know, Ruben, if the assessment is approved, does that carry through for 10 years, even if the house passes into someone else's hands?
The requirement is it can, and the requirement is under state law that the new owner will file a notice to continue the program, and in which case they agree to all the terms and so forth. But yes, it does carry with the property.
I'd like to urge the commission to accept this evaluation and approve it.
We have a motion.
I move that the Tacoma Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the special tax valuation for 720 North K Street in the amount of $61,347.08.
Second by J.D. Elquist. Motion by Katie Chase to approve. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Great. Thank
you. 4A board briefing on 1239 East 54th Street, J.M. Hendrickson Homestead.
I'll just give a brief introduction. Okay. I believe this is Ryan Wilson.
Williams,
sorry. You can join us if you'd like.
Do you have your drink?
I'm working.
You know what?
So the J.M. Hendrickson Homestead property, which several commissioners are probably familiar with, others won't be as much, is a homestead. In the 1920s, it was added to the Tacoma Register of Historic Places on November 12, 2011. The part that's currently under Landmarks designation is the area that you see shaded up there on the screen of the aerial. I'm going to apologize for the jerkiness of this mouse because I think it's a little beyond this range. But this is the boundary, roughly, of the property that was historically designated in 2011. Late last year, the Landmarks Commission, after extensive talks with the property owner, agreed to reduce the size of the footprint, basically, of what was considered to be historically designated. So they eliminated this from the historic designation, retained this, which includes the barn and the house and the garage on the site, and it's about 1.4 acres. So the original farm was just shy of 5 acres, and the designation included the existing Craftsman-style farmhouse, garage, and barn. As I said, in fall of 2012, the owner requested feedback on a proposal to subdivide and develop a significant portion of the open space of the property due to unforeseen personal financial concerns. On May 8th, following a public hearing, the commission forwarded a recommendation to the city council to change the boundaries, leaving approximately 1.4 acres under the historic designation and removing the historic designation from the remaining portion of the property. The understanding was is that would allow development of the property portion that was removed from the designation. The City Council did take that recommendation and pass it through a revised boundary resolution. And you can correct me if I say anything mistaken, because I know this is an ongoing thing, but the entire property is currently for sale.
Correct.
And under the City of Tacoma Land Use Regulations, the property can only be replatted once every 5 years. There's been no boundary separation or plat yet. But because of that, once every 5 years, it makes it infeasible to subdivide the property into two parcels and then sell the remainder to be replatted again in the residential units and sort of do it all at once approach. Otherwise, you have to wait 4 years. It's essentially a replatting moratorium for 5 years.
Five years.
And so this is a briefing and feedback request for a potential development on the vacant property area. And as we, when we last talked, it was potentially overlapping in the historic boundary that is in place now by about 30 feet, and there may be new information there. But this is an opportunity, I think, for you to provide an overview of what you're looking at, and you just take it from there if you'd like.
Okay. My name's Ryan Williams. This is Tony Baumelli. He's the civil engineer on the project. I guess starting out, I'd like to significantly reduce or remove the historic designation on this property. This is the proposed layout that we're going into our scoping meeting with the city, and it encroaches quite a bit. I guess from talking with Ruben, the significance of this property was, I guess, the land, and now that's already been reduced because another developer was looking at it, and he was looking at short platting it into four lots, and that was what he desired, and he ended up walking away from the project after getting the boundary reduced by one of his, I have one of his maps that he drew up to. So this is the map that he came up with on the short plat, and why it was one of his layouts, and that's why it was reduced. It was based off, you know, his desire to subdivide it and buy from her. And I have the same desire. It's just different design criteria, and you know, I've got some pictures of the barn here, and it's really in disrepair. I've got some more pictures on the camera. Unfortunately, I couldn't get them printed out in time. It's rotten. The roof is sagging. It's just been sitting in a lot of overgrowth for the last 15 or 20 years. The house is in really nice shape. Ruben, you've seen the house before.
Yep.
So it's been well kept over the years. And from my discussion with the property owner, her intent. Originally, this is what she's told me, was that she wanted the house to have a historic designation because it was her family home since 1922, I guess. It's been in her family, and so going through that process is how the entire property got adopted into the historical designation, or what is the exact term for it? It's a historic...
It's a city landmark listed on the Tacoma Register of Historic Places.
And at this point, she's having hardship. She has cancer. She wants to sell. And I'd like to buy it, and I'd like to subdivide it. But it doesn't, with this much of the property being encroached upon the developable area, with this overlay, it's not feasible. So that's what I'm here to talk about, is to get that removed or significantly reduced. And she recently put it in 2011, and then 6 months ago got it reduced to that. So I mean, this is something that's been has been designated for 50 years or 30 years, or it's essentially 6 months. Did these already go around?
And the pictures, the other pictures.
So this is how the barn is here. It's in the far back of the property. The house accesses off 54th and has a detached garage. So that's how it orients on the property. And there's some other close-ups.
Can I see that platform?
Yes. One more time. That one or this one?
Proposed. Yeah, this one. So... the shaded area that's the red hatch on there right now, that's what was approved.
That's what is currently in place.
Yeah, and that was reduced down from the L-shaped plot.
Correct.
The house and the garage are the first two structures, and the barn that you were describing is all the way to the back.
Yes.
None of those are in an area that you're proposing to subdivide.
No.
Correct.
Okay. These lots 31, 30 through 32, how are they being accessed?
Off of the arterial and the new plat road there.
There's a little pipe stem that accesses right here, and then this one will access these two lots.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're just little drives that go back to them.
It still leaves currently that...
There's no requirement in this district that you have to have 50 feet of street frontage, like there would be?
No, that would be like a shared access facility. You mean for these three right here?
Yeah.
Yes. No, not for... They're a pipe stem lot, and so that's it just has to have a pipe stem to it. You can do up to two lots with the pipe stem.
Okay. You're doing... Oh, I see. Two can share the pipe stem?
Sure, yes. Those will access that one, or two, and that will access lot 30. Correct.
And, Mr. Williams, am I correct in my understanding you're having a scoping meeting with land use planners coming up?
Yeah, on the 19th or the 20th.
On the 19th. And so some of the issues relating to the requirements will come out of that meeting, I imagine, for the site, you know, off-site improvements and things like that.
All of that stuff's, I mean, it's part of the Tacoma, the code. So, I mean, this layout, I mocked it up, but, I've done some work in the city of Tacoma, and Tony's really familiar with it. So, as far as I know, for a napkin drawing, it's fairly decent.
Even if it could get shifted back to just the three buildings.
What lot size are you proposing in that?
I think it's 95 by 300. Somewhere in there.
The new lot size would be 95 by 300.
That would be...
Each one of those 30,
the
32...
Yeah,
those are 5,000 square foot lots.
Okay, 5,000.
Now this one, this leaves... my scales, but it's approximately 95 feet, and then the depth here is 300.
Yeah, so they're 50 by 100 lots.
All those lots are right in there.
Can we see that again down here?
Yeah. Sure. I guess just, I was one of the, there's been significant board turnover probably, or commission turnover since this last came through, and I wasn't even one of the members of the commission the first time it came through with the original designation. But one of the discussions that we had, just to catch you up to speed and to catch everyone else up to speed, was that there was some debate within the commission about whether or not the designation was about the significance of the structures themselves or the context of the structures. And the landmark designation was for not just for the buildings, but was for the entire site. And there was discussion about how much of the site could be taken away, and that there was still the understanding, the contextual understanding, that it was a historic homestead. And so for that reason, there was kind of a middle line that was drawn where it's like, okay, well, the structures are significant, and there's enough land around them that you can still register this as being part of the original farm, meaning that it wasn't reduced down to just to just a city lot, basically, you know, because the structures, while the structures, the house is in very good shape, and the family history is very rich and significant for the city of Tacoma, the context of the structures was also a significant reason for the nomination to begin with. So for that reason, I think that there's a compromise that needs to be struck that says that that allows the existing structures to still be understood as being part of a larger homestead kind of thing. So I think that's something that this is my own personal understanding of it as a as a member of the commission, I would have reservations about reducing the lot size so much that the house just becomes another house on the block, because the significance of the house was that it is the original homestead house. So I think that that we should try to find a middle ground of what is a reasonable lot width for the landmark designated property, that still allows the property owner to do what she needs to do financially.
And that's, I'm aware of that point. Ruben and I discussed that, and that's I guess that's where I made the counterpoint here. It's already been reduced so much that the land no longer has any significance. So, you know, an acre and a half isn't the 5-acre tract. It seems like at this point,
yeah,
it might as well be reduced all the way down or be removed entirely, you know, because it's not. The reason it was brought into the historical, the landmark, it got the landmark designation was for the property, and now the property's essentially been removed. So
I would disagree with that. We don't have the nomination in front of us, but it was listed under more than one criteria.
Okay, yeah.
So, because there are several criteria for listing on the Tacoma Register. One of those, I believe, was the architectural significance of the buildings.
Okay.
So that's still intact. And there is a difference between integrity and condition. So even though the barn may not be in the best of shape, it's still relatively intact. And so that's how we look at the building versus it being in poor condition. And then I think there was at least one other, I think there were three criteria that it was listed under. So we can't
right,
just
I wish I would have printed look that at, out. I read that.
Yeah, it was
and I was on the commission when we, not when it was designated, but when we went through this, and I remember being hesitant to even divide it in the first place because I thought this was what was going to happen.
I voted no for the record, and I was the sole vote no.
There was even some discussion with the original developer of monumenting the corners of the original property to identify the whole piece as historically significant, but I don't remember whether that was part of the actual approval or not.
I was on the commission when the original designation took place, and Mr. Steele is correct that the other part of the property was a significant part of the original designation, and the compromise he talks about, I think, was what we agreed to this last time by leaving the historic property as it is currently. And I think that the commission would be poorly advised to reduce it any further. I do believe that the property, even the smaller amount that is in place now, does give a better feel for the original homestead than reducing it down to.
What it does do is make the project unfeasible, and it means that she can't pay her medical bills for her cancer.
Well, and we heard that. Last time when she was here, or her representatives were here, and that's the compromise we came up with then. I think the property gets so small that it loses its value as a historic property, particularly as a homestead.
Just to read into the record the criteria that it's listed under, it's criterion A for its association with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history. Criterion C embodies the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, etc. And then F, owing to its unique location or singular physical characteristics, it represents an established and familiar visual feature of the neighborhood or city. So here's the nomination if anyone else wants to look at it.
I'd like to reiterate what Commissioner Covington and James has said about the original discussion. I also was on the commission when this originally came before the commission, and I know that Ruben, as well as commissioners, raised the issue with the property owner about making sure at that time that she absolutely wanted to include all of the property, all of the 5 acres.
Okay.
And she was adamant that she did, that she wanted to have all of that designated part of the property. Very clear. You mean you do not want to use this property, because that's what it means. Then she comes back later and says, well, circumstances have changed. And again, I was here when that conversation was held. And there was a considerable disagreement about whether the commission should even consider any kind of compromise at that point. Because of the designation, because of the criteria, because of the condition, and so on. But compromise was agreed to at that point, that we would reduce the amount of the property to what it is today. I'm a non-voting member here, but I was opposed to reducing it when it first came up, and I would again, this is kind of crazy from our perspective as the Landmarks Commission to we have designated this as a landmark. It is on the register. You could request and make an argument for removing it from the register. That is an option. But I don't think that the commission ought to really entertain reducing it further.
Okay, so is that the standpoint then? Then rather than reduce or remove that historical designation to just the house and the garage, I should pursue rescinding it entirely?
That would be my position. Now, other commissioners might disagree with that, but that would be my position.
And I guess the last time that we made this decision, the property owner wasn't here, and she had both a representative and the individual who was interested in developing the portion attend in lieu of her. And I think that there was a tremendous amount of sympathy that we had for her position, and the understanding being that, okay, we understand that you're in a very, you're having medical hardships, and therefore we're willing to do this. And I think what the case that would have to be made is, you mentioned feasibility, like, what is this target number that, I mean, I'm an architect and a developer, so I know how to see these things all ways. And I fail to understand how the property is not developable without establishing a new boundary line revision that was different than what we already agreed to when we didn't even want to agree to it. I guess that's the real struggle here, is we don't want to be in a position where we're constantly going back and changing things purely because of our sympathy for her position. We approved this the first time for good reason, and the second time we did it out of sympathy, but the third time it feels like we're doing it out of creating a better financial opportunity for yourselves and for the property owner. But we're not entitled to provide prosperity. We are entitled to provide sympathy, but not not maximize profits for someone. You know what I mean? I feel like there's the property is perfectly developable with the concession that was already made, and any addition.
You're aware of all the offsite improvements that have to be done, correct?
Yeah.
L Street needs to be entirely approved. You need frontage improvements all the way around, regardless of if you do a short plat. I don't know why he ever even looked into doing a short plat on this property.
That's not within our purview, again, like what James is saying. And also, if you were to come, this is just an idea right now, but if you were to come to us with, like, this is what I'm going to do, and we could see it. Historic designation does not mean that you cannot build new structures on the property, but we have to review it.
Okay.
And so that's, I think, where we can't talk about ideas and conjectures. We have to see something physical, like
that's
a plan.
That's what I plan on doing right there.
We'd have to see drawings of what the buildings are going to look like so we can determine what the...
I'm not a builder.
But the boundary line revision, I think that the struggle with this is that first a new property line has to be established, and then you're developing the site that's essentially off of the...
This isn't a boundary line revision or anything. This is just to either reduce or remove the size of this historic overlay to something that doesn't encroach upon the future developed residential.
Yes, exactly. So what I'm saying is they're not going to set up a new without knowing that they can...
Right.
So
it's we're caught in a...
Chicken and egg.
Exactly.
Here,
we're technically not supposed to review something until it's...
But you're talking about... I mean, can you pass that down? You're talking about three parcels that you're creating by revising this...
Is it talking about...
Oh, because these ones wouldn't be...
Right.
Pretty two lots.
Yeah,
could
which is significant.
Shift,
yeah.
Well, if not, I mean, we could do something different too, but I mean, could it shift back a little bit maybe to that line? No?
It's all or nothing.
Okay. I mean, I guess that in that case, if it's all or nothing, it's really hard to have a conversation about it because I don't feel like we want to... That's more than half of the frontage of what it was already reduced to. That would be reduced further. And I mean, it's unfortunate that was the line that was established the first time, but I don't think we want to keep revisiting the line and each time
can
reducing
we
it by...
Make it so it's just on the structures? I mean, does it have to be on the property? I mean, I don't really have any objection. The house is perfectly fine the way it is, and there's, as far as the barn, I mean, I don't want to go tear anything down. I don't want to do anything to the stuff that's there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the real challenge because from my standpoint, and I was the one who voted no last time around,
right.
the property is historic not because of the significance of the structure, although that is a component to it. Its significance is as a homestead and the history behind that. And so you reduce the size of the lot so much that it becomes another house on the block, and while it might be a really great craftsman house, there's lots of really great craftsman houses, and I just wonder whether or not we want to go and put them all on the register. And there were other members of this commission who disagreed with me on that, who said, no, I think we should nominate any craftsman house that wants to come in here that has a family history like this. But from my position, this is a homestead, and it should feel like a homestead, and that's the significance behind it. And that's why it was nominated to begin with. So, I empathize with your guys' position and what you're trying to achieve, but at the same time, I feel like that we set a line and we have to stand by that line because there was clear reasons why that was allowed.
Before we get too far down, I wanted to not forget to say that the commission, I think, knows this, but you may not all be familiar. There is a provision in the code. It's 1307.055. It's called rescission of landmarks designation. That's a removal process. That's a request that can either be made by city council, by this body, or by the property owner. It's a written request, and it needs to include a statement of the basis for requesting the removal and the criteria by which that removal is requested. One is economic hardship, although there is an economic hardship test that has to occur. Basically, it's that the property cannot be maintained as a landmark without causing undue economic hardship. The second is catastrophic loss. Obviously, that doesn't apply, or that there has been some sort of procedural error in the designation process. Now, it's been through the designation process twice, once to establish the 5-acre landmarks designation, once again to establish 1.4-acre designation. And so if that request comes in, the commission will hold a public hearing to take comment on that and make a determination whether or not the criteria are met. And from that point, issues a recommendation or not to city council. And so there's a hearing notice, findings of fact process that goes through. That was something that I believe was discussed previously, but that was at the time anyways, the desire of the owner to actually maintain a listing on the historic register for the property. So anyways, that is one alternative process. if that's the wish of the owner. And so I just wanted to throw that out there, let you know that there is a code provision for it. You can read through it and see how, you know, what kind of avenue that provides.
Just to back up a minute, and I want to say as well, to follow up with what Ruben was pointing out here, is that again, although I'm a non-voting member, I feel like the property owner needs essentially to try to get this off of the register, do whatever she feels like she needs to do with the property. If she then wants to come back to the commission and put some portion of the property back on the register or something like that, then that might be something she wants to do. But right now, what we've been had happen is this sort of constant process of coming back and coming back and coming back. And that's not good for the process that we have set up here for handling and designating historic landmarks for the city of Tacoma. And I don't think it's good for her as the property owner either. She needs to figure out what she wants to do with the property and then decide what part of that property she wants to designate, if any of it.
What she wants to do right now is sell.
That's exactly what she said the last time.
And that the buyer backed out there.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. You know, it's probably because of all the off-site and infrastructure improvements that he had to put in. It doesn't make sense. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't meet minimum.
What doesn't?
I don't know what. Land use this falls under, but typically there's minimum density requirements, and I don't know why the idea was to propose three lots in this district.
Or in the city of Tacoma.
In the city of Tacoma. I would expect that there isn't minimum density requirements.
Weird.
Okay.
You can do whatever you want.
Certain areas there.
There's minimum lot area. And I mean, it might vary per to different zoning, but in the R2 zoning, it's really wide open.
Well, I mean, I think that even with the where we have the designation now, that there's still plenty of opportunity for her to pursue development of that portion of land which is no longer designated. And I think if she wants to go down that route, that's the route that I personally would like to see happen. If she doesn't want to go that route, I think that what Commissioner McClintock said would be the next best scenario, which is remove the designation and let's start over and establish a new designation.
And what's the process for pursuing the removal of the designation?
That's what
you just went over.
It's
just the, you know, her medical hardship is what she's going to have to...
Well, you have to... Yeah, and we can talk about this further, but it's in the code. It lists what... the economic hardship is, what the findings need to be to get there. You know, it does discourage removing things from the historic register. That's the policy, unless there's, you know, really no choice. And then from that point, that evidence or that that request in writing is submitted to this commission. This commission takes that, we'll schedule it for a public hearing. A public hearing occurs. If there's any testimony, the commission takes that or any comments, and then from that point, the commission will deliberate, have its, you know, issue findings and a decision.
Is this the commission?
This is the commission.
Okay.
And then those findings are forwarded to the city council for consideration. And so the city council has already seen this, you know, within the last 6 months, the reduction in boundary. So I think that the you know, whatever goes to them will have to be strong and well thought out if it does go there. And then ultimately it becomes a legislative action by the city council.
Is it essentially the same thing, the same process as reducing this boundary? You have to go to hearing, you guys make a recommendation. I mean, it's the same thing except in one case it gets removed. And
the revision of the boundary was basically the commission... took it as it was a revised resolution, basically, a revised boundary, and so it wasn't a delisting or anything like that. There's not so much of a boundary adjustment process that's well-defined in code, so the commission heard the evidence or took the request in and then reviewed it and then just sent a recommendation to the city council just to revise that boundary that was already in the designating resolution. The burden of proof, I think, for rescission, total rescission, is quite a bit higher. And that's the criteria list of like the three or four criteria under which that something is considered.
But I mean, it's really over five lots, you know, that lot 31, 30 through 32 could shift over to that portion, which is not under not wide enough.
That's a side yard that would have to go up against that arterial, which can't be done. You see, that's the side of those lots.
You mean if they were turned this way?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't along a public road be access. It's because of access. You gotta, you know, the fronts would come in this way. You can't come into the side of the lot. So
I don't know if that exists, and I mean, I think you should talk to land use people anyways, because I don't know. I've never heard of that. There's a minimum lot frontage, but mm-hmm. I've never heard of a maximum lot frontage. There's a minimum lot frontage, and then there's a minimum number of square feet. And mm-hmm. as long as you have the minimum number of minimum feet of lot frontage and minimum square feet.
What you're talking about there is not accurate.
I'm not a land use guy. I don't work in the city of Tacoma, but okay. That's my understanding. I think it's, I don't know. I just have a really hard time. I think we've all, you know, said what's on our mind, and I think that's where it probably has to stand.
So even though this is the designation, we can build within the designation as long as it's reviewed through.
You need this commission's approval to do that.
Okay.
So you'd have to go through design review before you got any sort of permitting.
Just for the construction of the structure,
though,
right? I can build the infrastructure of the plat and subdivide the property. This
commission doesn't do land use review, however. I think that's a conversation I'd have to have with the land use planners to find out exactly how that affects the proposal for a plat.
See, I thought it was the other, when we approved it, I thought it was that we approved that her lot size could be reduced down to the square footage, to what's shown here in red, but that the whole thing was still, the whole site was still under, was still under design review of the commission. No, it removed it from design review of the commission. Okay.
And just to be totally clear, just so we're not confused, the only thing, the boundary that was changed was basically, if you think of the historic designation as an overlay over the property, you know, kind of hovering there, that's what changed. It's still one parcel at this point. So there was no boundary adjustment or plat or anything that occurred, or subdivision that occurred as a result of that. Now, I think that, you're going to have a scoping meeting with land use to find out, what all the requirements are and those kinds of things. From what I'm gathering from this commission, then, and folks can add or correct if I'm mistaken, but that the commission does not, the feedback is really that reducing the size of the designation, the designated historic designated area, is not something the commission supports at this point. If you can make something work within the non-designated historic area, great. If it can be demonstrated as an economic necessity, which is something we'll have to talk about the code, then it's, rather than another boundary adjustment, just removing the historic designation entirely would be the, the next best thing, or the next most advisable thing. Is that correct?
Gentlemen, you have any other questions?
One last question. So, James, we could still build in here, but that these would have to go under your guys' review, correct?
That's what I don't know enough.
If you, let's go forward and make some assumptions that yes, the property is platted, showing the lots there,
sure.
Without changing the historicness of the designation,
right.
and that the city accepts that plat.
Okay.
That yes, the construction on the lots that are under that overlay would have to be approved by this commission. It'd be, I think that from my perspective, you know, and this is, you know, total unknown territory for me, but it would probably be fairly awkward to have developable lots that have been platted if the commission is not comfortable with construction in those areas on those lots, if that makes sense. But yes, in theory, if part of the plat creates new residential lots inside
right.
of the designated area,
right.
then when it came time to do any construction in that area, those permits would have to be approved by this commission before they could be issued.
So those 8 lots would, just what you said,
yes.
okay, would have to be reviewed for the building, at the building permit stage, basically.
Correct. We'd get there before that. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't know if these would be sold off as individual lots or if one person would take it and develop the entire plat or, you know,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, that would make it simpler in a sense because then the, you know, the commission would consider the proposal as one development proposal as opposed to having individual property owners come back and kind of be surprised by this overlay over time each time someone wants to build something.
You
would really, I think, probably, I mean, just from a management perspective, we want to have it a lot cleaner than that. I think you'd agree with that.
No, I understand.
Okay.
Path of least resistance. It's not always best.
So, as of right now, we're agreed that we should pursue the rescission process, and in the future, she can come back and, or someone could, probably not likely that one, I don't know.
I think you could say that, but at the same time, I think there's a pretty strong lobby in this town for historic advocacy, where I think this commission, but I think you might see other people get involved. And
in what?
In removal of a historic designation.
So now don't pursue the
removal? Well, here's the thing. I'm not sure that the commission's endorsing you to proceed with the rescission process. What I'm hearing is that's the if you're going to proceed with doing a project that involves the historic area, that's the way you're going to get there as opposed to modifying the boundary of the overlay, if that makes sense. And so that's what I'm hearing.
I would agree with that.
Yes.
I don't want us to be endorsing
a
landmark being removed, but we're just saying that these are the options that you have. No endorsement from us either way.
And we're not getting anywhere on the reduction of this boundary, it sounds like.
Not with this commission, no.
Okay.
I mean, I think when I read the email, or read the initial, what was sent out, and it said something about a 30-foot reduction.
That was our previous
question. It's more like 60 feet, but, yeah.
Yeah, or 50, something like it. And that's why I was asking to begin with, if it would just shift back to that line, if this area was still big enough for you guys to...
So at that point, you'd only be losing 3 plots instead of 8.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. That's why I was initially mentioning that to you, James, if it just shifted back a little bit. And I know you're saying you already did it once.
I thought that what we were looking at is just a minor change. And I was thinking, oh, this isn't going to be such a big deal.
Yeah.
And then we see that there's ambition to reduce it much further than that, and I think that that's what causes us a great amount of alarm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I apologize for that. That was based on the conversation that I'd had, the preliminary conversation.
No, he's right, and that's the first thing I said to him. One of the first layouts I had, I just estimated that size. I don't think I had the overlay on there, and I thought it split this lot down the middle.
Yeah.
So I had it marked on, and so, I mean, essentially, for those 5 lots, it's 50 feet.
Yeah. See, I think that if it were something that was minor, somebody messed up and realized that it wasn't developable in the size lot that's required because of the fact that they didn't consider that the first time around, I could understand how we make a minor revision or something like that, purely because it made sense. But to do something more significant just to make more lots doesn't, to me, make sense.
Is 50 feet significant?
I would say so, okay. Yeah. When the frontage is, what is the frontage now?
200,
yeah. I would say 50 feet is significant.
Okay.
I mean, I would definitely say that 100 feet or whatever is being proposed here is more than significant, is impactful, and is something that I wouldn't be interested in entertaining.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time, I guess.
We're not bad people.
No, I just,
we want to make whatever compromise we can make, yeah. But at the same time, there's a duty for us to protect the interest of the commission, and that's what we're doing here. Just so you understand, I feel like I came across as a jerk, and I just want to make sure you understand.
It probably would have been better to bring me in here with her current medical records. I mean, it's like...
Or for her to come in and pursue it.
This is a dire situation for her. She can't drive. I mean, she's disabled. Double mastectomy. It's not good.
Yeah.
You know, so... but I understand your guys' standpoint, and so the next step in this process, I guess, is I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sure,
and get that, you know,
we'll look at the scoping meeting also and see what comes out of that as well.
Okay. So if we change that 50 feet back to that would be too much, right?
Using your own criteria, losing 25% of your lots made the whole thing infeasible. So losing 25% of the frontage might conceivably make it infeasible from our standpoint as well. So you understand what we're talking about.
I do.
I think the mistake was probably made when she first entered it into the, you know, she didn't think it through very well. And so...
She was in an entirely different position when she first brought it to the point.
So, that's unfortunate. All right, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a good night. Are we out of here then? Is that?
I think that's it.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Item 6, chair comments. I have none. Staff comments.
At this point, I'm sure I should, but I don't.
Oh, come on.
not today. It's like
hearing nothing from Mr. McKnight.
Get out the tension knife.
Is
there a five? We got five all together.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget about
marketing events. JD? We'll slip JD in there.
Sounds good. Just have a few. So I convened a marketing committee of Lisa and Chris and myself yesterday morning. And just kind of wanted to get some feedback on a couple things, just get some direction from the commission. So we talked about social media marketing and that sort of stuff. I wanted to move forward with that, but I also wanted to figure out how to go about that. Because right now, I believe there's a Facebook being used. That Ruben, I think you offered that, right?
Ruben, right?
Yes, all me.
Yeah. It's
the power behind the throne.
Power by Ruben. But it's under the name of, what do you use, Tacoma Historic Preservation? Or
Tacoma Historic Preservation.
Yeah. And kind of my thought was just to see if you guys were okay with using that kind of as our official title, so to speak, via social media. I don't see it. Because my thing was, like, it already has followers, he's already using it, versus creating a whole other one with a new title.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah. So with that, then I'll kind of build from there. And
what's
then
your password?
We can talk about that.
Yeah, all right.
About that. And then, in regards to Preservation Month, you know, the big thing is, you know, doing awards and kind of going through that process. And then, when do we usually start that nomination process?
When we usually start it?
Yeah.
Oh, right about now or before now?
Yeah, right
now.
Before.
3 days before.
We're rolling.
And then I also wanted to see if there's any feedback on, like, as far as actual, like, awards, kind of like what we did last year. I was thinking about, I've approached B Sharp, the coffee shop /one more/ down the street, and they seem very interested in hosting us. It's just a matter of a date. We did a Thursday evening, you know, last year, and I thought that worked well. Any feedback on that?
far as a day.
I thought the event last year was exceptional. It worked out very well. Yes. We had a very nice crowd.
Yeah.
And we had Historic Tacoma co-sponsor it, and everyone had a good time.
Beautiful. So with that, I might go ahead.
I was going to say one thing that that it might be nice to consider is that every year, just because of scheduling and things like that, we end up doing the party and everything towards the end.
Yeah.
And I think it might be nice if we have things planned to actually do the kickoff party as a kickoff for the start of Preservation Month, but somewhere at the start of things.
So,
and we typically file application or request for a proclamation from the mayor to declare Preservation Month, but again, we sometimes get it kind of mid or towards the end of May, and I always feel kind of bad because the bike month people are so on top of it, and so they get it right at the start of May, and I was sitting there, in city council chambers going, it's Preservation Month too, I just, the paperwork's not in yet, and so, at any rate, so, and when we do that, that's when the chair gets to give the chair's annual address or the state of preservation, and then get the proclamation. And that's in the past, we used to do the awards there at that time of the proclamation too, but actually I think it works much better to have an actual awards reception and invite city council folks if they want to come and then get the proclamation declaring Preservation Month instead of having to hand over awards at the podium or the dais in front of city council, which I know that city council always wants to move through their business too. So so I think my recommendation, first of all, is I think the party was great last year, and JD was wonderful with putting that together. And then the second thing, it was the best one that I've been to since I've been here managing the program. It kind of sounds like it's my responsibility.
Oops.
Yeah, I know. You get somebody that knows what they're doing. But the other thing is that to bring that, try to get that close to the start of the month.
Yeah.
And move that up a little bit. So. And then the third thing, I always bring this up every year, but if there's a way to sort of crowdsource the potential nominees instead of having the commission trying to derive the categories and the potential recipients, instead see what the community thinks. If there's a way to do that, that'd be another suggestion I'm having.
So kind of my I guess my ambition was, looking at that, there's the 1st or the 8th of May, which is Thursday evening. If you really want to be at the beginning of May, I would say May 1st could work. So any feedback on that? And then my thought as far as getting, because I agree, it'd be nice to have kind of the public or even send an email out to the other historical entities that exist in, Tacoma and the region, just, soliciting nominations. And one of my thoughts too, and this is something I'll go into greater detail as I develop it more, but was to have, we're doing a similar thing with the Arts Commission, and we talked about it at our meeting, but having this, basically utilizing that name and creating a domain to where it's sort of a place where you can go and kind of navigate what we do in a way that's a little bit more approachable and not so city-oriented. And I think there's a good way to use that to solicit nominations, also using social media to solicit nominations from the general public. So I might put together something and by the next meeting have something for you to kind of review, and then we can start that. Or if you guys are okay with it, even just start it on my own and I'll work with Ruben to start soliciting nominations, because I think we should probably go that route versus having a conversation around the same. Any thoughts on that? More or less, are we okay with me going to solicit people for nominations and then bringing a list of...
Are you saying that the nominations might be then through the venue of this new domain name and or the Facebook thing?
Or the different, sending out an email to the other historical entities asking for questions.
I know I'm mostly just notes, but there's a website called Survey Monkey. It's free.
Yeah.
And that was one way that I know I've gotten stuff both within the city and otherwise,
yeah.
Where they've used it to get information from people.
Yeah.
And something as simple as, I think you're allowed 10 questions and it's free.
Okay.
And I know free is always usually pretty good. And they'll give you the report back saying this is what, and if not, I think it's $19 for 3 months or something like that.
Yeah.
But you can always just put names or ask them to actually just nominate individual people. Not to overstep, but
The way I thought of it, or the way I conceived of it anyways, is just trying to get the community to sort of generate the pool of nominees, and then it's up to the commission to figure out how you want to deal, you know, like which ones you think should be awarded and which ones not. So the, and maybe like setting, and this might be, I think, a discussion for the commission, I don't know, is setting if you want to have criteria or categories.
Categories. Mm-hmm.
If you want to have categories, if the commission wants to set some categories, like, you know, two or three, I mean, you don't have to, you know, do a lot and then go forth and solicit that way. And it's, you know, it's not a formal thing, so it can come in a couple different ways. And or I mean, this is another way to do it, although you've got to start somewhere. But, you might set basic requirements, like we want a description of the project, we want a photograph of the project or the person, you know, and the criteria under which they're being nominated. So people have to make the case to the commission also. So it's not just people saying, like, I think the Bob's Java Jive should be, you know, get a preservation award because it's cool. You know, instead, like, you know, it's people that actually put together something and submit it to our office, and then I bring it to the commission as, you know. Yeah.
I think that's probably the better way to approach it, because you're going to get a lot of that if you just say, nominate something historical. You know, there's going to be a lot of just old buildings, because they're cool.
So that might be a better way to go about it. And, yeah, I'm just worried about, like, time frame.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest thing. Yeah.
We don't know how much response we'd get.
Exactly. Yeah, we could get.
Didn't we have some categories from last year that we developed?
Every year the commission has developed several different categories.
Because I was wondering maybe if JD were to take those categories that we developed from last year and maybe begin working around that.
Do you remember?
My experience in the past is we came up with the individual or group we wanted to honor
then we made up the categories. But they were pretty good categories.
Well, maybe,
if I remember
maybe like JD, Lisa, and Chris, if I can provide you guys some of the history of the past awards.
That would be awesome. Can we make a meeting with you individually?
Exactly.
The three of us.
Yeah, well, I can sit down with you and we can go through that stuff and provide those documents for you so you know. And then, I mean, you know, and then so I don't know how the other commissioners feel, but since this is the marketing and events committee, they could start putting things together.
And I think that we still will need to put on our thinking caps and, you know, individual commissioners and you know, think of the people and buildings and so forth that we think ought to be recognized as well. Just it's more a way of generating nominees, you know. So
yeah.
And I can envision that we will still probably have to do some of that.
And I hope I'm not out of line asking this question, but this is one thing that came up during our meeting, which was with the idea of a marketing and events committee, is the general overall purpose of the Landmarks Preservation Commission, and this is an adjunct to it, to generate new business? I mean, are we looking also for new areas of landmarkability?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's... And, you know, so at some point when, you know, I'm going to be hiring, but at some point, two things. First of all, on March 12th, Carrie McCausland from our media and communications office is going to be in here presenting to the commission an overall media outreach strategy and how the commissioners can participate in that and what are some of the ideas that she has to broaden reach. So I think that there's two things. First of all, generally, like, you know, increasing the audience reach for historic preservation in the Landmarks Commission. I think this commission should be more visible in the work that it does for the city. I think that general historic preservation awareness needs to be broadened because there are a lot of historic issues and historic resources around the city that are not, you know, well known or appreciated. The community, you know, much of the community history of Hilltop, for instance, there's sort of thematic things that are not known. And there's also just, I think generally, we're not where we could be with people's overall thinking about what it means to live in a, you know, railroad era historic city. So I think that there's that. And so, you know, one component, I mean, there's obviously the management of landmarks. Like, you know, you guys come in here, someone says, I want to change my windows, and you ask some questions, and then you make a decision on that. That's a regulatory aspect. And then there's the identification and designation aspect of the program, where we actually try to get buildings on the historic register to protect them. And so there's that piece of it. And then there's education and advocacy. And those are sort of the main program components, I think. And education and advocacy, I think, is where we have not been doing what we need to be doing in the long run. So, yes, I think that the purview of the Marketing and Events Committee is exactly in those areas. is to try to increase awareness, promote the cause, with the general goal of both you know, providing people more meaning about this, the place that they live and work, and also to do a better job of protecting historic properties. We've got 165 buildings on the historic register, and we've got like 1,100 in historic districts. We have 44,000 buildings that are of age in this building, in this city. So,
I just had one other part to the May concept. So it's like, you know, it'd be nice to see maybe like a, you know, add some events to it. We were talking, I brought up the idea of like a, I don't want to use the word walking tour because I don't like walking tours, but a walking tour for lack of a better term. And I have a couple of ideas I've been floating around with, and there's like a few ideas just around kind of, again, that education. Like, you know, if you look at a lot of our historic buildings, there's a lot of questions to be asked, right? One of the ideas I had too was just around some of the more infamous architects, you know, that have existed. There's a lot of buildings by kind of the same guys, you know. So it's like, I did a little bit of research off of the, all of the properties in the Tacoma Historic Register. Decided with this idea of like trying to piece together some sort of walking tour slash lecture slash conversation outside in the spring around kind of these key players in architecture around Tacoma and kind of what they built and who they were and what they did. So there's a little bit of a thought process behind it. Originally I wanted to do something that was like Founding Fathers based, Joe McCarr, that sort of stuff. It was too spread out and too much of a lot of like sites, not enough like physical location. And I think that looking at our purview of what we do, I think that something around architects around Tacoma, some sort of tour.
That might tie in pretty well with the work that Historic Tacoma's been doing with our architect histories.
That's right.
Yeah.
7 or 8 years ago, the commission sponsored a walking tour of churches at around Wright Park. We did that 2 years in a row, and we timed it for Mother's Day, which always comes in May as well, too, and advertised as an opportunity for families to get together that afternoon and do something historic. And got extremely good turnouts for that, too. So you might look at whatever Sunday, Mother's Day would be.
Take your mom to church, too.
Be a good son, daughter.
And I would like to engage, like, again, Historic Tacoma, and then also, like, you know, because I'm on that board, but the Tacoma Historical Society, you know, it's kind of asleep in the bushes, but kind of trying to make a comeback, so to speak. We just moved down the Providence building, which is exciting. So I would like to find more ways to collaborate with our other historical entities.
And last year, I believe that Historic Tacoma was actually a co-sponsor of the awards with us, too. So if we're going to approach some of those groups for nominations, we might consider having them be co-sponsors, and that might help turn out at the actual event as well.
They definitely want to keep that tie.
Yep. Awesome.
Eugene can report back to the Historic Tacoma.
Yeah, I'm a board member of Historic Tacoma. The one thing, I'm also a resident of the Edison District, and to me that's a district that should be looked at as a historical district. There's a core there. Now you tie it with the Pioneer Trail Railroad, and the aspect that it was part of Pacific Highway South and Highway, the historic Highway 99 from the 20s on. To me, there's something that's not even being discussed right now in the city. Tying it to something like Route 66, which is 99, both the same significance. One was LA to Los Angeles, or to Chicago. This was border to border. And we're part of that. So that ties to both the railroad and the aspect that we're a core city, because we're one of the major links along that corridor. And to me, there's something the city could do. Just a few historical signs that designate that original route could do a lot to make people aware that there's a lot of history here. So I apologize for a little bit of enthusiasm, but if you guys are doing exactly what I see is appropriate. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Anything else, Janie?
Okay.
All right. Other comments? We're done with our agenda, and we're adjourned.